everyone will be filling in. But I think we will call the meeting to order and assume that everyone will be here soon. We have a wonderful response on the part of committee members. Almost every committee member was able to make it. And, of course, we have many local legislators as well, and we'll wait till everyone arrives before we introduce them. Let me just make some, just a few brief opening remarks as people gather. You may know that today our committee visited in Rushford, in Hoka, and we made a quick stop in Goodview. In Rushford, we entered as many buildings as we could because, of course, the good people of Rushford have done an unbelievable job of cleaning up. And you might quickly drive through that town and think that there wasn't a flood there if you didn't look very carefully. And so we had to go inside to see how they had dismantled those buildings to take down all the damage. And what some said to us is they had done the easier part of the job. They had cleaned up. But the harder part, the rebuilding, was still to be done. And one gentleman said that he didn't understand why Katrina took so long to rebuild. You know, why couldn't they just figure it out themselves and get the job done down there? And he said, now I understand, because there is only so much that you can do, and particularly in a small town, there are only so many resources. And so we begin to understand the realities that other people have faced in other parts of the country. It was a wonderful learning experience for us. And we were able to share some information separate from all of the requests we're going to hear tonight about needs. And I thought I would share just a few of those. Representative Leader, who comes from Crookston, Minnesota, and has had probably as much experience with floods as anyone else, and is also our transportation person, was able to give the mayor of Hoka some advice. And Representative Leader, I don't know if it looks as though there's not a microphone. We'll see if we can pick you up. Just briefly, what we discovered is there's some education that has to take place, and we'll have to figure out how some of these things happen. But Representative Leader, your advice to the Mayor of Hoka.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor Hoka. Oh, and also I did see...
Okay.
Now it's on to you? Anyhow, I recognize... couple of county engineers here, and I believe they maybe are aware of what I told the mayor of Hoka. Apparently, if you are with the city or city council, you're always concerned about getting your damage fixed as quickly as you can and do it with your own forces. That's probably what you shouldn't want to do, because then you're paying it with your own taxpayers' money. The first thing you should do is go out and justify, take pictures and identify where it is and keep the records, and then like I believe, hire contractors if you have to hire trucks or equipment. And there's an hourly rate set by FEMA. And you keep your records and show where it is, and then you get reimbursed. You do not get reimbursed for your own, using your own equipment or own personnel. And I think that's what they haven't told a lot of people that are involved, like the cities. I did talk to the city or the county engineer from Rochester, whatever county, that Olmsted County. So he's aware of it, but apparently they don't say that information out. The same thing is with your cleanup. If they clean out their houses and put it on the curb, the city can pick it up and they can get reimbursed. Well, actually, the contractors, not rather in the city, but if they pick it up and haul it, then they get reimbursed. If they pick it up with their own equipment, they won't get it, or own personnel, again, they won't get reimbursed, unless they have changed their policy. But that's the way the policy used to be. Those are the big things that I think you'd be critical of, and you should be aware of, to keep good records. And initially, you don't get payment that early. You'll get some partial payment, but your final payment may be a year later when they come around and inspect. But do your repair work as quickly as you can, but take a before and after picture and justify it, and you'll get reimbursed generally, practically 100%. And I think it's pretty easy. A lot of times you have a structure or something was in bad shape, and you maybe should have done it before the, or taken care of it before the flood. Actually, if you take your pictures and fix it up, you'll get reimbursed from FEMA, and I know it because we've done it. And I mean, it was nothing illegal. It was further damaged by the flood, so those are the things I think you should be concerned about. Did I miss anything, Alice?
I think that's good. It gives you a flavor for the kind of conversation that took place between members of the committee and members of the community. Rick Hansen, Representative Hansen.
I forgot one thing.
Yes.
FEMA does not reimburse anything for private. It's all public. Like, you can do it for any public building or public anything publicly owned. The only way privates generally can get, could get reimbursed, is FEMA or the state may. The state normally can't become involved directly with privates, but they may appropriate something to the city. The city then can use that money if you need to buy out or buy out a house or doing something else. The other thing I think Rick Hansen will talk about, a lot of these streams or creeks will be filled with debris. That is not normally covered by directly that, but I'll let Rick talk about that one.
And Representative Hansen, who is on the Environment Finance Committee, was able quickly to arrange a team of engineers to come in, I believe, tomorrow, and perhaps you could give us a little bit of information about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Junkie and I were in Hoka with the group, and there was a business owner that had was near a stream that had stream bank that had blown out, and so we made a call to the state Natural Resources Conservation Service, NRCS, and using Representative Junkie's cell phone, which worked and mine did not, we were able to connect the local business owner with the NRCS staff and the team of engineers coming down looking at stream bank stabilization in Hoka tomorrow. So I think often in this we look at SBA and the alphabet of federal agencies and state agencies, and there are some agencies that we don't normally think of in terms of response. And with soil and water conservation, looking at trying to stabilize some of these areas in the bluff country can help protect as we move towards winter and rain will continue to fall.
And we have Representative Junkie, who chairs the Ag Committee, and he has an announcement for people in the region.
I just want to, Kate's in the back there, my committee administrator, so she can answer questions. But the Ag Committee, both House, Senate, and Commissioner Hugeson at the Ag Department in coordination will be down on the 13th next week. One of the things we forget is obviously the human toll is great in any disaster like this. But certainly there's a whole lot of stuff outside the city limits, too. And whether it's helping the fertilizer plant in Rushford dispose of their chemicals, or whether it's rebuilding terraces, or whether it's making sure we have feedstocks, some washed down the river for our farmers' animals this winter, or even just fixing fences, repairing feedlots, helping shore up buildings. There's a whole gamut of things we're going to look at. So we're coming down for an agriculture listening session in Houston at the Lutheran Church in Houston at 11 o'clock, right? 12:30, that's why I bring her along. 12:30, Houston, the 13th ag listening session, and hopefully then that will become part of any special session bill should there be a special session.
And so we have been gathering lots of information. That is our purpose today. We'll be hearing from a number of cities this evening to just get some sense of damage and need and what's working and what's not. I've been asked members to tell you that we need to project and we need to speak directly into the microphones, and that's probably true for those testifying as well. I should also say for members and others, the meeting is televised live on local cable channels 8 and 19. And in addition, the hearing will be downloaded and archived on the House website. You go to www.house.mn under video archive. I have one other hearing in October to announce. And believe it or not, this one was actually planned before the flood. And this was a sort of an intentional look at southeastern Minnesota from a transportation and infrastructure perspective, economic development and bike trails and so many other things, to have a community forum on economic development and infrastructure and how it will impact the future of the region. We're continuing with that even though, and perhaps even more importantly, because of the flood. That is Thursday, October 11th in Lanesboro at the Community Center from 7 to 9. And our committee will be there visiting the region. And so I'll be co-hosting that hearing that evening with Representative Shumper, who represents that area. And now, I think, members, we're all here. And so before we hear from the first city, if you would all introduce yourself with name and where you're from in the state so that members know who their audience is. Representative Leader.
I'm Bernie Leader. I'm from Park City, Minnesota. Al Drunke from Wilmer, Minnesota.
Rick Hansen, South St. Paul.
Lyndon Carlson, represent Crystal Robbinsdale, Golden Valley area, the Twin Cities.
Warren Solberg, I live in Grand Rapids and represent Grand Rapids and Aiken.
Gene Pulowski, represent Winona and Houston counties.
And I should tell you there are two members here who are not members of our committee, but we are very pleased that the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader are both here, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Margaret Anderson Kelleher, I represent a district in Minneapolis, and I'm glad to be back in Winona today.
And I'm Alice Hausman from St. Paul.
I'm Tony Sertich, State Representative from up in Chisholm, up in northeastern Minnesota.
I'm Mary Murphy. I represent the cities of Scanlon, Thompson, Proctor, Hermantown, and five precincts in Duluth.
I'm Representative Tim Mahoney, and I represent part of the city of St. Paul, the east side of St. Paul.
I'm Neil Peterson, and I'm part of Bloomington.
I'm Bev Skelzy, and I represent Little Canada, Vadnais Heights, part of Shoreview, part of Roseville, just north of the capital, about 8 miles.
I'm Dean Erdahl, and I represent Meeker County and six townships in Wright County.
Jean Wagenius, part of South Minneapolis.
Kathy Singleton, part of the Power.
And those are Capital Investment Committee members, and we have local legislators joining us.
Steve Dreskowski, representing Northern County, Baldwin, Southern Baldwin, and Southern Baldwin.
Jean
Hoppe,
I was raised in
we also have many staff here, and I'd like to ask one of them to come to the table, Kathy Novak. As we toured today, it was clear that having some sense of how the state has responded in the past to disaster relief would be helpful. And there are two handouts, and I hope we have at least one for every town. We ran off 75, but obviously the crowd is a little bigger than that. So, Ms. Novak, if you would explain the kind of background information that might be helpful to them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since this is the bonding committee, I'm going to start with the one that is headed appropriations and bonding bills for major disasters. Over the last 10 years, the state has had three major disasters, two flooding incidents, one in 1997, the Red River Valley flooding, and one in 2002 in Roseau. With flooding up there, and then a severe tornado that hit St. Peter and Comfrey. And this table is organized to show you what has been done for bonding for these three major disasters. And to give you a little bit of comparison of the size of and scope of the disasters, they're all terrible, of course, but the number of counties that are affected and the size of the funding, I've put in a line that says the federal funding. And that's the fairest comparison to show the cost of the disaster, at least in terms of federal contribution. So from this, you can see that the Red River Valley flooding of 1997 was past anything we've experienced in this state before then. Bonding bills are limited for certain purposes, as you know, because you're members of the bonding committee, but for the information of the rest of the people here, we can only use bonding for public purpose and for permanent improvements of a capital nature. But there has been a significant amount of bonding assistance that's been provided for at least two of the disasters. The St. Peter tornado, there wasn't a specific bonding bill for that disaster. And the types of things that are funded here tend to be flood mitigation, things that will help the area resist having a similar disaster in the future. Transportation needs are something that we can do bonding for, other public infrastructure and public buildings. We've used bonding to assist with rental housing, and we've used bonding for other infrastructure like sewer and water. We've also used it for the state's portion, a portion of the state's match for the federal public assistance program. Not all of the match is eligible for bond funds. The cleanup, for example, would not be something that we could fund out of bonding, but the majority of it we can use for that purpose. On the next page, the next one is general fund, and of course general fund is the most flexible source of funding that the state has, and it can be used for a variety of purposes, and has. And I'm not going to go through all of the things on this page, but there have been two kind of guiding philosophies that the legislature has used in using general fund for disaster assistance. One is that we have tended to use existing programs, the existing state agencies and the existing programs in those agencies. And if we need more flexibility in those programs or that agency response in legislation, we're able to waive some of the rules or statutory requirements so that the money is even more flexible than it might be otherwise. This is the type of funding that we can use to help private parties, businesses, and individuals. But typically the state, as representative leader told you earlier, the state has provided the funding for individuals and businesses through their local communities. The local communities are closest to the disaster and can assess what is needed there. And so, for example, if you look at the line that says trade and economic development, well, this agency doesn't exist anymore, but it's now called the Department of Employment and Economic Development, but the programs are the same. We have a Minnesota Investment Fund that can be used to provide grants to local governments to provide loans or grants to affected businesses. And we've done that pretty much for all of the disasters. We've also used general fund funding for some agricultural relief disaster payments to farmers. We've used it for the FEMA match and for some social service purposes that, of course, couldn't be done with bonding. And in the 98 tornado, we also provided some assistance for child care assistance and the historical preservation. Unless there's any questions, one thing I would like to say is that these bills tended to be passed not immediately after the disaster, but within a reasonable amount of time after the disaster occurred. But the legislature continued to work on funding beyond the initial bills that were provided, so that this isn't a comprehensive list of all the assistance that's been given, but it's kind of the first response.
And thank you for that. And we've been joined also by Senator Lynch, another legislator from this area. And I should mention that We're also joined this evening by Paul Moe. If you just wave your hand, so he is the deputy commissioner in the Department of Economic Development, and we've shared a lot of information today with him as well. So, with that as introduction, we're going to begin with the City of Winona, and if all three would come forward, we have three chairs, and we figured if we have all the members from a particular city or county come up, we can move. And Mr. Miller, are you going first?
I'm going first, Madam Chair and Committee. Welcome
to the committee.
We're always happy to have you here, and I would invite you down any time under different circumstances, and we appreciate your being here. There's a lot of hurt in this area, as there was a lot of hurt up in the metro area when the bridge went down. Two disasters, people got killed, lost their lives, and all of our sympathy goes out to all those people. A little bit different, though. Up in the Twin City area, if you were used to driving on I-35, now it might take you a little longer to get to work or to the ball game or to wherever you're going. But at least you got a home to go back to or a business to go to. Here in southeastern Minnesota, there are many people without homes. There are many people without businesses. There are many people who lost everything that they had. I've seen it, and I'm sure as you toured the area, you've probably seen some of those situations too. There is a lot of hurt. We need that bonding bill, and you have a roadmap as to how to do it. FEMA's been here for about a week. One thing the governor stepped up. He declared both on the I-35 and in the flood area here, he declared a disaster. And then he did what he had to do in order to bring the federal government in here. And they've been here. Like I said, FEMA's been here, I think, a week already. The SBA, the head of the SBA was here, I think, Wednesday or Thursday. Homeland Security, the chief of Homeland Security, was here a week ago. The federal government has responded. Now I think it's time for you all to step up to the plate. I think it's time that you put your political philosophies aside and you look at this and you say, hey, we got to do something, and you got to do it pretty quick. The city of Winona, comparatively to Goodview and other Rushford, Stockton, they got hit bad. Our police and our fire weren't spending much time in the city of Winona. They were out in Goodview, Rushford, Stockton. Our fire department was rescuing people. Our public works was out doing what they could do throughout the area here. So all of our resources were available immediately. That night, our fire department was set up a station out in Goodview, and we're taking people off of their homes. So I'm not going to go into all that. All I'm here to say is that you got to act. You got to act on a transportation bill. I heard infrastructure mentioned. The city of Winona has $30 million plus of infrastructure needs. You tell us where we're going to get the money. You don't want us to have, if we go in for a sales tax, we got to fight our way through the system. How do we do it? I'm asking you. You tell us. One idea I've thrown out, you're looking at a gas tax. Let a couple cents of those stay in the area where it's where the gas is pumped. Then we don't need any sales tax. We can handle our own. I know that'll probably never happen, but still, it's an idea. So we need the bonding bill to help these people. These people are in dire need. We need a transportation bill, and I would venture to say most of you up there are for property taxes. We need that tax bill. You all met for I don't know how long. You start in January, and I don't know you got done when, May or whenever it was. And here we are. We're still, the people are waiting for things to happen. And the people are sick and tired of the bickering back and forth and this and that and the other thing. You have three things that you can act on. You can act on a bonding bill, you can act on a transportation bill, and you can act on the tax bill. All the rhetoric has been said already. You said it for 2-3 months. Now it's time to act. So let's do something. With that, I'll turn it over to Eric Sorensen, our city manager, who has a few comments.
Mr. Sorensen, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, committee members. I just want to start with one little story. I can break the big hardship up here if you need to hear it from your own. To tell you what goes on in the regional center under these conditions. We got a call from Stockton. There was a propane tank stuck under one of the bridges. Our people called through the system up to the state, to the EOC, the state center. We were told it was a local problem. Now, if we had taken that position, the local problem wasn't ours. It was Stockton's. In reality, we knew that isn't how we were going to treat our neighbors, our friends in our region. We sent people up there. They not only removed that tank, they not only accepted that liability. In checking today with our assistant fire chief, we removed 15 propane tanks that weighed anywhere from 500 to 1,000 gallons, and scores of smaller tanks. And we were told it was a local problem. We spent our estimate right now, and we're not asking you for that money. We're asking FEMA, as has been pointed out. We probably spent about $50,000 on overtime, essentially for our neighbors. We had, on any given day, over 40 public works employees. We certainly had the vast majority of our police and fire. Our building inspectors, you visited Rushford. Guess who was down doing a lot of building inspection in Rushford? We were. So as the mayor said, we need help, we need action. The three bills that he's described, the governor said, I'm not going to listen to the tax bill unless you take the inflation factor out. Take it out. Pass it. Argue about inflation in the next session. We all know there is such a thing as inflation. That would give us immediate help. Local government aid in its rawest form in a city like Winona, I think we can demonstrate what that really means. The bill that was vetoed, that was overwhelmingly supported, in fact, I think it was a supermajority that supported that bill when it was passed, that would have given us $1.37 million more. If we received that money, and I already made that recommendation to mayor and council, we would reduce from 5.4% our preliminary levy, which, by the way, when I started out with all the requests, I was actually at 43%. We brought it down to 5.4%. Meaning we cut out a lot of projects. So if we got that aid, we would bring our levy down to 2%. That's $220,000. We would bring we would create an off-state aid street program, $500,000. We have a lot of roads in need. We have a lot of sinkholes occurring right now. We would put $200,000 into our airport for essential upgrades. We're a business community. And we would take the rest of the money and put it into an infrastructure fund, which, ironically, I guess, we had created shortly before the flood occurred. It must have been a premonition. And we would put our money into there. These are not frivolous items. And
I hope that that message is clear. So we have several needs. I was asked to talk about just a highlight, and as Representative Leader said, we should do, we have done, we are in the process of applying to FEMA. We're applying wherever we can apply. And we want to apply not just on our behalf, but on our neighbors' behalf. For example, just to do an area that hit us hard on the east end of Winona, we need to do a hydraulic analysis of the outlet of Pleasant Valley Creek. That's $150,000. Replacement of Pleasant Valley Creek culvert, $150,000. Clean out the Lake Winona wall outfall. It was interesting what happened. The torrent of debris that came down from outside our corporate limits, I would say, landed in the wetland area, which is our natural drainage area to the Mississippi River, creating, in essence, an artificial natural, some would call it, dam. And our estimate is $300,000 for that. Now, we're applying, again, wherever we can apply. And then we think we should be doing something permanent in our region. And we're probably going to be conducting, however we do it, a hydraulic study looking back up the various draws. And that will cost us $250,000. This does not take into account what you saw. It does not take into account the businesses, the hundreds of homes in our region that have been devastated, destroyed. I'm sure you've seen the X's wherever you've gone. And we think we serve a purpose in our region. We would think that the state would recognize that. We are a regional center. You go to the LGA formula, there's a concept of a regional center piece. And we think we, again, demonstrate who we are and why we need help. With that, Mayor, we should turn it over to the...
We have concluding comments from Mr. Pomeroy, Chief of Police.
And I'd like the fire chief to come up.
Okay, we are a little pressed, and so we're...
We'll make it short.
Okay, thanks.
I'm also going to have Sheriff Brand, the Sheriff of Winona County, come up real quickly. Distinguished committee members, we are here this evening to talk about the issue of interoperability. And I know that some of you have seen that issue come about in the last 3 or 4 years with the advent of the 800 megahertz system and the state build-out in phases of that system. We had some interoperability problems with this disaster. And I want to move quickly to the Sheriff, Sheriff Dave Brand, to talk about a couple of those issues.
Mr. Brand.
Thank you. Major disaster occurred on August 18th with flooding around. Read or heard. I'm the sheriff of Winona County, and my biggest thing is the public safety of the county, and that's saving lives and property. I was called out along with my staff that night that we had a flooding situation in Stockton and wasn't aware that we were going to have problems in many areas, including Rushford and Houston County had flooding. What I'm concerned about is the radio systems that we have. 800 megahertz is what is... They're putting towers up for 800 megahertz in Winona County. We are with VHF Digital at this time, and it's something that is working for us. But the problem is that we do not have good enough radios right now to make it work. So we're staying with VHF radios at this time. We did a study for the 800 megahertz, and we're still 7 towers in this county will not cover the area. Winona will not be covered. And the eastern part of the county will not be covered. So Winona County would have to invest money into these towers. I had to, because of the radio situation, I had to spend $94,000 this last year in order for our deputies to have good radios in their cars. And that's just a small portion of our county to work our radios to make sure it's safe out there. That night when I called for assistance from Homestead County Sheriff's Department, which has 800 megahertz, we did not have any communication with them. VHF and 800 are not connecting. We need the interoperability the technology to connect VHF and 800 with our county, with the rest of our EMS people in this county. And we need funds, Frank and I need funds, EMS people in our county need funds so we can have and keep our officers safe, that we can respond to emergencies as we did on August 18th and be out there to save lives. Wabasha County, again, Houston County, they're all VHF. We had problems with the people that were coming down. And we had many sheriffs that sent agencies down here, but we didn't have the interoperability to talk to these agencies, Ramsey County, Hennepin County, when they came down here. We had to give them our portable radios, which I had VHF radios to hand out. Luckily, we didn't lose more lives than we did. We lost 5 lives. That's 5 children. One of our problems is the communications that we need help with in this county and the surrounding counties, as I said.
Just to take a couple of more minutes, the problem is unique, I think, to Winona and some of our surrounding counties. Most of you that either drove in or flew in looked at the topography of Winona. You've got high hills and deep valleys. The structure that the state is building out in the highway system to support state agencies will not work in some of our areas. The problem that we have is much of the equipment that we presently are using is antiquated. I bought our radio systems 20 years ago, just after becoming the police chief of the city, and we have not been able in the last 2 or 3 years to replace this equipment because we don't know what system we're going to. We need a couple of things. We need money to hire a state engineer to come in and give us advice on what is the best system for us, for the city of Winona, and what are all of the costs associated with it. We then need to move because we're mandated by 2012 to make this move. So we're really under the gun on this. That's where we need your help. So anything that you can do to assist us, we think that the 800 megahertz system is going to cost upwards of $5 million for the city of Winona to make that move. We feel that with the VHF digital or VHF digital hybrid trunk system, we're looking at somewhere around $3 to $3.5 million. It's a cheaper way to go. You know, it's a system that we already know will work in our area, and we just need your help to make that happen.
Representative Erdahl has a question.
Just to follow up on those comments.
And have we identified you?
Ed Kroll, City Fire Chief of the City of Winona. The city manager mentioned that the City Fire Department was outside its jurisdiction the night and the day following days of that fire. I personally was in our Emergency Operations Center, known as the EOC. The only way I could communicate with people that were saving lives in Stockton, they stopped counting after 19 people. So you got to have this picture in your mind of taking people off of roofs and second floor windows. That's what our firefighters from the city of Winona were doing in Stockton. The only way I could communicate with them is through the volunteer ham radio people. So with all this technology we're surrounded with, we have to go to the volunteers who on their radios could contact. Cell phones would not work. VHF wouldn't work. 800 megahertz, I doubt, would have worked in Stockton Valley. Several weeks before this incident, we had a multi-agency drill in Winona that involved many agencies, including an agency out of Rochester Fire Department, Rochester Fire Department. We could not communicate with them. We had to give them our radios to communicate. So it's a big issue, not only in Winona, but across the country. We're all facing this to be in compliance with the FCC regulation that we have to comply with by, as the police chief said, year 2012.
Representative Erdahl has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a couple of general comments. First of all, I'd like to commend you for all of your efforts in behalf of the whole area here, and also the resilience that the people have shown as we have toured through this area today. I'm sure all of us here are also concerned about the issues brought up by the mayor. We would like to see a tax bill, a transportation bill, and a bonding bill. If having better radio systems can help to alleviate problems such as we did face in this crisis down here, we certainly should look at that. But I would also just like to say that I think one of the concerns of the people here today is what can we do, what would you like to see us do to immediately or more directly provide relief. And we've seen people without homes. We've seen people whose businesses are swept away and they can't reopen. And they're looking to us, looking to the legislature, to the state of Minnesota for assistance. And if you have suggestions for ways in which we can provide that type of assistance and what you need, I think it would be good to bring them up.
And that's probably for all people testifying as specific as we can be. But we thank the city of Winona. And while Winona County is coming up, we have David Kramer and Pat Walters. I'd like to just introduce a few more members. Senator Erickson Ropes has joined us, one of the local legislators, and then two more of our committee members, Representative Burns sitting at the table there, and Representative Dean on this side. And that just about gives us a full complement of our Capital Investment Committee, so we're very pleased. So if we have the two people from Winona County, do we have David Kramer?
David Kramer, Winona County Highway Engineer.
Okay, and is Pat Walters joining you? Welcome to the committee. And again, as we're going to have to caution everybody as brief as possible so that we get every city and county.
As far as the damage to the county highway infrastructure, just to our county road system, we're estimating between the roads and the bridges somewhere between $3 to $4 million. That's a very rough estimate at this time. We've been focusing on getting our roads back open and getting our roads safe, and the exact damage assessment will be coming in the next few weeks, but that's a very rough estimate at this time. Some of that will be eligible for FEMA reimbursement, some for Federal Highway Administration reimbursement. The reimbursement rates vary, 75-80%. I'm guessing that the county's portion, the local portion, will be somewhere in the $600,000 to $800,000 range. So any assistance that can be provided from the state in that regard would certainly be appreciated. I know it's been talked about, property tax relief and a comprehensive transportation bill. In my mind, those two things are linked. The county government, if we don't have a comprehensive transportation bill from the state, the county's option is to fund transportation is to put that on the local property tax. I started out in this budget cycle planning to get my ducks in line to go to the county board and recommend a $1 million local property tax levy increase in order to fund our roads, because the legislature and the governor haven't been able to get together and do anything for us. Now with the I-35W bridge tragedy, the governor sounds like there's some wiggle room on a motor fuels tax increase. So based on that, I'm basically backing away from that and saying we'll just hold the line on the levy that goes to the County Road and Bridge Fund, and hopefully the legislature and the governor will be able to get together and do something on that. But I would like to say that there is a linkage between property tax relief and a transportation funding bill.
And Ms. Walters, welcome to the committee.
Well, I can definitely see that, you know, the legislators now can give us some immediate help on the abatement process that we experience here in Winona County for businesses and non-homesteaded property, because that in the law it says that we can refund the current tax to them depending on the damage and the number of months they cannot occupy or they're not able to occupy it. It's going to be a burden on our local government or the county and the city of Winona, because all that's taken, we'll have to come up with some extra money, in other words. So I can definitely see that. In 2008 also, would Texas Cable in 2008, it would be a help for the future. But we can probably incorporate that in our budget and increase the levy. But for right now, the levy for Cable 2007 is already set, so we have to come up with those funds.
Thank you very much. And Fillmore County. We have two people from Fillmore County. We have a sign-in sheet, by the way. Since this is an official committee hearing, we ask people who are at the table testifying to sign in. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Pickett and Mr. Gwendoland.
Mr. Gwendoland, I'm filling in for him, too.
Okay. Please identify yourself for the record.
Randy Dowell, Fillmore County Commissioner.
Bob Pickett, Fillmore County Assessor.
Our highways, initial estimates, a couple million, about $2 million. It could go quite a bit higher, but that's the initial. My main concern is that the county commissioner, as you know, just mirror what Winona County said and all their issues, with the 800 megahertz and all the other issues. As I said before today, a state-mandated county run, with Rushford being in my district, there's going to be a huge need for the social services. There's going to be a huge need for public health, our emergency manager, veterans, every single department we have, the sheriff's department. Take this opportunity to just thank immensely all the surrounding communities, Monona County, Houston County, Olmsted County, and every other county, I'll forget somebody, United Police, and Fire and Rescue. I think every single community around here that didn't have major flooding sent somebody. They kept one crew back and sent a crew. That comes back to our local government aid. Our social services department runs about a $31 million budget, federal and state, with about $1.2 million in local match to that. This is going to overwhelm our ability to absorb that. The government aid is imperative. The Rushford City will address more their losses, which are just staggering. And like was discussed before, what the bonding committee is able to do, just talking and around everything else, the aid to the local cities that are so majorly affected by this, and have them decide how to basically help reconstitute their business and housing communities.
Our office worked on a disaster reassessment there for the city of Rushford. That's where most of the property damage was in Fillmore County. Our preliminary values on that, we had over a $16 million loss in residential property out of total building value of roughly $65 million. So about a 25% loss in damaged and destroyed houses there. There were a lot of them that were really totally destroyed, too. Commercial property, we had over $6.8 million in loss there out of over about $10.6 million total building value there. So real substantial amount of the commercial property was destroyed in the city of Rushford. And it's been a very vibrant community. It's probably one of the best ones in Fillmore County. I hate to pick one over the other, but it's been a very vibrant and active community throughout the years, and it's pretty much white belt.
Thank you.
I have tons of other things to say, but I'm going to save time for the city of Rushford to address their needs, if that's possible.
And, you know, at the end when we have questions, some of you who have spoken from other perspectives may want to be available and come forward. Houston County, Mr. Dibing and Evans. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good evening. My name is Marcus Evans. I'm the Houston County engineer. And just to kind of update everybody on the situation, you've evidently taken a tour and are somewhat familiar with some of the damages. In Houston County, the northern townships, northern tier townships, as well as some in the northeast part of the county were hit the worst. Townships such as Money Creek, Houston, Mound Prairie, La Crescent, Polka, and Brownsville. And as far as an estimate of the damage to the county highway system and bridges, we came up with an estimate, and it is very preliminary, at $11.1 million. We have a number of roads that suffered quite severe damages, about 15% of the system, or roadways, suffered high severity damage, about 15% of them suffered moderate damage, and about 20% of the road system or roadways suffered about or low severity in our estimation. As far as what may not be covered by FEMA or the Federal Highway Administration, we figure about 10% of that, about $1.1 million or thereabouts, would be an estimate. But again, we'll have to wait and see kind of how things come out. As the Winona County engineer had indicated, it's tough to get our hands around this because of the fact that when we start filling in areas where material sloughed away, you start adding material, and you look at that and you think, okay, this is how much material it's going to take, and you can just add to that by an unbelievable amount in some cases. So it's a very difficult thing to estimate, but we'll, that again was a very preliminary estimate. The other thing that's difficult to estimate too is the residual damage. There's been damage that we can see that's clearly apparent, but as we review the system days after the event, we still come up with other areas that have also suffered damage. And so, again, trying to get our hands around that has been very difficult. Currently in the county, we have two roads in the Money Creek area and Houston area that are closed. We're doing our best to try to get those open. We have one bridge also that's closed on our county system, and we're working to get that one back in service. As far as transportation needs are concerned, that's been a topic of some of the previous presenters. When we went to the county board recently with our budget, I shared with them some interesting statistics. One statistic being that in Houston County, we have about $1.5 million worth of paving needs per year, and we receive about $2 million per year from our state aid through MnDOT. And so when you think about that $2 million, that covers basically our bridge needs. It covers reconstructing roadways that are not up to standards, covers our paving needs, and also safety projects. So it doesn't go that far, and often is subsidized locally by local tax dollars. When we look at the bridge system, in particular the township bridges in Houston County, are in poor shape to begin with, and a number of them were damaged with this flood. In fact, in Houston County, we have 43% of the bridges that are either structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. There are four fracture critical structures, just like the one in Minneapolis that went down. So there is a true need for bridge bonding money in the future also, and also an increased funding for transportation. There's a number of different ideas out there as to how to address those needs, and I think a number of them definitely have merit. But the things to consider are dedicated funding as well as indexed funding. So something to keep in mind in the future as you look at possible ways to fund transportation. The other thing I'd like to stress is that the townships in particular have been hit very hard. Those townships that I mentioned earlier in particular, if you were to get off the county system or the trunk highway system, you'll see that these townships are really hurting. And when you look at their financial situation, to be able to handle the cost that FEMA will not cover, that's going to be a huge burden on these townships, and something that we would ask that you give some consideration to, seeing if we can solve that also.
And Mr. Evans? No, that was you. Mr. Zeigen. Sorry.
I'm Tom Dibbing, and I'm the Houston County Assessor. And we've come up with some preliminary numbers so far, and obviously our numbers are not near as great as Fillmore County with the city of Rushford and Winona County. We were lucky at the city of Houston that the dike wasn't breached at that point, or we would have had the same thing happen that happened in Rushford. So far we have about $3 million worth of property damage. The one thing I'd like to reiterate that I think Pat said to you is that the help that's going to be coming from the state is for homestead property, but it does not cover commercial and non-homestead properties, and we would like to see that would be covered also with the homestead property. That Those types of properties are covered through the local abatement option at the county level. And that would be an increased burden, certainly on Winona County and Houston and Fillmore County. So we'd like you to certainly take a look at including those other types of properties along with homestead properties.
Madam Chair, I just want to ask one question. On the dike in the city of Houston, is there a need to do some type of adjustment to that dike? The dike came close to failing, and will there be an assessment? And what would that cost? And then what would be a projection? If you don't have an answer, tell us that there is some plan to take a look at that, because when that city was evacuated, you were within a hair's breadth of having another rush.
Yeah, as I understand it, too, and that's, I guess that's not within the scope of my, you know, that I could answer that question, and maybe there's somebody from Houston, the city of Houston, that could answer that, that type of thing. I don't know.
I was going to say, the Corps of Engineers, definitely, that's their purview, and we were told that it was within 7/10 of overtopping that dike, and that dike was designed for I was told, 2 foot of freeboard. In other words, 2 foot of area between the height of the water and the top of that dike. And so it was way beyond what it was actually designed for when they evacuated that city. So a very, very critical issue there with that dike. You're right.
Thank you.
Representative Peterson. I want to clarify something that was mentioned earlier about the abatement. You just mentioned it again. And your comment was that when the state help comes in, it is an abatement that helps you with the homesteaded property. It does not help with the commercial nor the non-homestead. And then you would have to do that abatement, or the county would, but you would have to have a source of funds to do that.
Yeah, the county has picked that up, and right. They can abate those types of properties, and then the following year they can levy for that amount. But, that amount, obviously, in Houston County isn't as great as it is in Rushford and Winona County. And
in those two classifications?
Yep. You heard the numbers from Bob in Fillmore County, their numbers for their commercial properties is a lot greater, the number of commercial properties that were destroyed or hurt in the disaster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to have that clarified.
Head leader.
I believe that is the case. Right. Yeah, that's not a problem. What we were told is that FEMA covers 75%, the state covers 15%, and the local government would have to cover the additional 10%. So that's the 10% that I cited. That would be the local portion. Right, yeah, I apologize for that. You're correct, and thanks for the clarification.
Representative Clausen. Could you explain who told you what FEMA covers, please?
This would be through the State Homeland Security Emergency Management folks indicated that.
Madam Chair, I would like our staff to do a clarification on exactly whether or not that is a reliable estimate.
Okay.
And I'm not doubting that you were told that.
Sure.
But I would like clarification on that 10%. Who told you, and then I would hope that we would be able to make an adjustment.
Thank you. And now we have the City of Houston. Connie Edwards, Mayor, and Larry Jervis, City Administrator. Welcome to the committee. Mayor, are you first?
I will go first. Thank you for inviting us. I have to say we are the luckiest city in southeastern Minnesota. As you heard, our dike was tested once again. Most of our flooding actually came internally. When you have a successful levee, you also are sitting in a bowl. And So what happened to us is the holding ponds that are supposed to hold the water weren't doing their job, which we actually flooded from the bottom up. So when you drove through Houston, we looked like a nice little oasis in the midst of all the devastation surrounding us when ours was all coming upward.
And I will tell you, we knew that because we had Representative Shumper on board, and he pointed out that most people in that town probably lost their hot water heaters, I think.
I got hot water today, finally, for the first time. And so pretty much what we're really looking at over there and what we really need to do, with the exception of repairing some of our equipment, is we need to look at dredging out our holding ponds and drainage issues. We had fire trucks pumping raw sewage. We had ponds being pumped out. We had mud and silt going through fire trucks trying to get those water tables down. I think it was 3 years ago, we had an estimate done on dredging out one of our holding ponds so we could eliminate some of the groundwater problem. But once again, it came to the almighty dollar, and it was what was more important. And we had greater needs at that point in time than dredging out a pond. Fortunately, we had trucks that were able to pump it. Quite honestly, when Representative Pawlowski asked if the dike would hold, Mr. Jervis and I had the same discussion yesterday. I'm scared of spring. We have so much groundwater still sitting in Houston, and if we get a fast thaw, if we get a regular winter, if we get a fast thaw, we're going to be hurting, and we're going to hurt both the outside and the inside, but we're more concerned with the internal flooding. So I guess what we're asking for is to look at what kind of government dollars are there going to be for us to actually get our drainage, our internal drainage, to get the water running to the pumps to get it out, to get our holding ponds where we can get the groundwater down. We have people living on very, very modest incomes, and for them to lose a bedroom set in the basement is a paycheck, and they can't afford to do it every spring. They need something to be done by us as a city to try to alleviate the problem if we can. And as we all know, as elected officials, our job is to look after the people, to protect the people, to do what we can for the people. And I believe we would be negligent in not looking at those ponding areas and the drainage issues involved in it. We don't have any hard estimates as far as drainage other than the one pond, because we found out through this flood where all the holding areas are, so now we can have our city engineer come in and assess how we need to put culverts, where we need to put culverts, so it all drains out properly.
Representative Mahoney has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Madam Mayor. When's the last time, or has it happened before, where you had your basements flooded out because of a rising... Looking at dredging, do you have a cost estimate now as to the dredging? And or maybe it's the next witness, and I can certainly wait for the answer. And
I believe it was around $50,000, and we have already done all the soil core samples, because we were told that when we started we have to have so many samples, and the cost of the dredging is dependent upon your core sampling and how much contamination you have, was my understanding. And if you had too much contamination, it would be a greater process because they'd have to dispose of it differently. But our core samples came back good, so it would be the lesser cost, is what my understanding was.
And Madam Mayor, a word of advice, I probably wouldn't go on that particular core sample because of the flooding that you might have gotten some other things, but your $50,000, that was the answer. That was the question that you had asked. Thank you.
Okay.
there. Mayor Edwards, could you explain the impact of the disaster on your police and fire vehicles?
Yeah, when we were talking about that, we have a one police car town. You know, we're a small town, 1,000 people, and we have but one car. And the night of the flooding, we had, as I say, the levee held, but we also had, in one part of town, 3 feet of water on one city street. And to give you an idea of the drainage not happening, and our city maintenance superintendent asked our chief of police to go out and check on the streets, make sure everybody's okay. Our chief of police got in 3 foot of water with the squad. It died, and it died. So the squad was actually totaled out in the flooding, which meant our chief of police had to drive his personal vehicle for about a week, and I think now he has a loaner car, which they were ready to junk out from state patrol. And we have nothing. We have fire trucks that are 1975 fire trucks that were pumping out, as they say, raw sewage. People had sewage in their basements. We had them pumping sewage, which leads us now to, if somebody has a fire next week, and we're going to use those trucks, what are we going to be throwing at their houses? It's not, I can guarantee you, not going to be clear water until we get those trucks all cleaned and cleared out. We also had one of our trucks, which is a brush truck, which is a not a loaner, but I believe we got it from the DNR some years back, that had smoke coming out of the dash, and that basically just died. So we used to have two old brush trucks. Now we have one old brush truck, one dead brush truck. We have two pumpers that are full of, well, sewage, you can use your imagination there, and fire equipment. The firemen were wading, literally wading in their boots and pants in their firefighting equipment in raw sewage. We have no idea what the integrity is as of this point of their firefighting equipment. We could be sending them into a fire next week, and who knows what the sewage and mold has done. They said already that they can see the mold starting to grow on their uniform, so we're going to have them check with the manufacturer fund if we can wash them or what we can do. If we can't, we're looking at $4,000 a set for these outfits. Our LGA got cut this past year. We're just bare bones minimum. Without the dollars to replace their equipment, we're going to be sending men in unprotected, shooting sewage at a house, and our cop's going to come riding up on a Schwinn. You know, that's pretty much where we're sitting right now.
Go ahead, follow that.
Follow.
Madam Chair, I think if the governor is looking for a reason for a special session, we found another one.
Representative Borghenius.
The sewage plant in itself is fine. It's the pumps. It's the pumps that need upgrading and need replacing. The actual sewage plant in itself is good. It's in great working order, but with the quantity of rain, when you have 15 inches of rain coming as fast and hard as it did, it just couldn't...
Maybe we'll transition to Mr. Jervis, and then you can follow up. But looks like he has.
I was going to say he's got more of the numbers.
And then Representative Genius, you can follow up.
Well, just to clarify what was mentioned earlier about the flood stage and the river level and all of that, we had a record crest this year according to the National Weather Service of 18.75. Our levee is good to 20 feet, so that's 15 inches that we were. That close. And we certainly sympathize with our neighbors in Rushford because we've driven through there and we are very lucky that we're not in the same situation. We've had three flood events. I think that was also mentioned earlier. How many times have you flooded? We've had three flood events since 1999 when the Corps of Engineers built the levee in 2000, 2003, and then this year. And I don't know, people have been talking about global warming. The flooding seems to be becoming more prevalent. So, and Representative Pawlowski mentioned, you know, earlier, do we have any plans to upgrade the levee system? And not at this time, but we did receive a letter from the Corps of Engineers, and we were going to be responding to that letter at our next council meeting, and I think one of the things that they're asking us is, do we feel comfortable with the levee as it exists today, or does it need some type of improvement? So, and as Mayor Krinsky, or I'm sorry, Mayor Edwards mentioned earlier, mitigation is a big thing with us. We need to improve our internal holding ponds and interconnect them or something. We have a huge pumping system, but the water internally is not able to get to that pumping system due to infill or silting in or whatever. So again, that's a big thing with us is mitigation, trying to prevent this from happening again, or maybe we won't be as lucky next time around. And that's just some basic upgrades. We've talked too about the communication system, as Winona County mentioned earlier. If the cell phone system had gone down completely for us, we would have been completely in the dark that day. So thank you.
Representative Keenius, follow up for
the point. When you have this problem with sewage, what are you doing? Do you have a central water system?
Yeah, the city of Houston has two wells, and there are a few individual homes that have their own standpoint or their own well, whatever you want to call it. And we have been passing out, as I'm sure all these other communities have been as well, passing out well testing kits from the Department of Health.
Representative
McGee. So,
well
tests for bacteria or nitrates.
That part I'm not familiar with. The Department of Health, I'm sure, gives them their results, and we haven't had anybody come back in and say what the results they got from the department were.
The city water system is fine.
Yeah.
The actual water system, the well site, that's fine. We didn't have any sewage get into the actual water system, and that's tested out fine. Our maintenance supervisor assured us all through that our actual, our well and our city water drinking system, that's all fine. It was on the sewage side that that we had the issue with the backup.
I'm glad to hear you have central water, but if somebody has a standpoint well, I would be terribly concerned, particularly if children live in that household. So perhaps we will follow up and see what advice the Department of Health is giving if there's bacteria or if there's nitrates. Because if that's the case, there's probably other things in that.
We did have our one well at our fire station. Our well is actually contaminated at our fire station due to flood water. So that, I guess that's something else that we need to address.
It was over what our fire station sits in a fairly low area, and it was the well head as such was overwhelmed or covered over by the floodwaters, because some of these internal ponds are near our fire station and came fairly close actually to coming in the building.
Members of the audience, you might be aware of different interests of committee members. Though we are the Capital Investment Committee, our committee is made up of chairs of other committees. So Representative Wagenius chairs the Environment Finance Committee, and so has those interests. Representative Leader and Senator Murphy, we have the good fortune, because so much of your infrastructure has to do with transportation, we actually have in Senator Murphy, chair of the Senate committee, and Representative Lee Deportation well represented here. So the makeup of people around the table does allow you to go somewhat beyond the bounds of what would normally be capital investment. Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a new member of the committee, we had had some presentations from the Public Facilities Authority, who deals with some of the stormwater treatment and wastewater treatment. Could we in the future get maybe a report on how the Public Facilities Authority could react if you've got wastewater treatment, and this is multiple communities here, and how they could respond under existing authority with a revolving loan programs? Because, again, my concern is we've got winter coming. If we have additional floods, you know, if we have additional rainfall events, and trying to at least stabilize and protect and prepare for the future, and if we have some way of using existing authority or funding to check on that. So I know we probably can't get that tonight, but if
we've made a note, and so we'll be sure to follow up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate. And now we have the City of Rushford Mayor Les Ladewig and the City Administrator Wendy Block and BDM Consulting John Stewart. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourselves for the record. Are you starting, Mayor?
Yes.
And as you know, we're sort of pushing everyone through in 10 minutes, so so much to say.
Madam Chair and fellow members of the committee, on behalf of my extended family from Rushford, I want to thank you all for taking the time to come here and visit with everyone in this local region throughout this disastrous time in our lives. Just a few flood facts for you that I'd like to have you be aware of, and we are passing out a pamphlet with the type of a brochure that would give us some more information for you to consider. On August 18th and 19th, the Rush Creek and Root River watershed was inundated with approximately 6 to 17 inches of rain. The Root River crested at 734 feet. Rush Creek crested at 731 feet, which was 5 to 6 feet above the lower level of our community. Over 50% of our city was inundated with flood water. We were also without power, any electricity. We were without telephone communications, cell phone communication. The only communication we had with the outside world from 4 a.m. until about Wednesday of the following week was our communication with our local sheriff's office in Fillmore County. Our wastewater treatment plant was washed out and submerged in approximately 4 feet of water. We had two of our city wells were also submerged. We had the vent pipes collected floodwaters, which in turn contaminated our wells with E. coli, for which we are still finally got to a boil order, and are still contending with some of that contamination in those wells at this time. Four of our squad cars, one of ours, three from our neighboring communities, were destroyed. We lost two fire trucks, one ambulance, and about 35 volunteer vehicles that were parked at the fire hall. 490 of 766 homes and businesses sustained damages, as well as two of our local co-ops, Ace Telephone, Tri-County Electric, damages that probably exceed $10 million to not only their infrastructure, but to their equipment and also their facilities. We had 79 homes and businesses that were red tagged, which means they were structurally defective in one fashion or another. 58 out of our 70 businesses have been impacted. 463 of approximately 600 jobs have been affected and or effectively lost. The tax impact is presented by the Fillmore County people, which equated to the $16 million and the $6.8 million, certainly does not include any contents of any of those businesses or any inventories that those businesses may well have had also. In consideration of that also, the lost wages that are going to be incurred by the loss of those jobs. We had one residential fire that I believe was caused from a gas leak through the impending flood. Firefighters fought that fire on waist-high water up to their chest and extinguished that and contained the fire so that it did not spread to any other areas. And so we are very grateful for that. One of the things that we're most proud of, and that is the fact we certainly offer our condolences to our neighbors that did sustain fatalities and casualties, but we had 29 volunteer fire people as well as a whole host of community volunteers that rescued over 350 people by canoes, flat bottom boats, and airboats, took them to the shelter at the high school, the Catholic school or hall, as well as our nursing home. We did not sustain one casualty throughout that whole process. We rescued one 90-year-old woman that was within a foot. Water was up to the foot of her ceiling. She was sitting on the kitchen counter. We rescued her out through the roof with a chop saw and sent a fireman down through to put a swing on her and bring her up. So we're excited about that. And I'm going to turn it over now to Mr. John Stewart that can provide some more of the facts. I'd be glad to ask to entertain any questions if you have at later time.
Mr. Stewart, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. I can't express enough how far the city of Rushford has come in the last 2 weeks. If you go back and just take a look at our cover on this handout, that isn't blacktop that's shining back, that's water. We had over a half of the community underwater. Since that time, we've got rid of the floodwaters. We've gone a long ways to cleaning up the sewage that washed out of our wastewater treatment plant and inundated all these homes and businesses. We haven't quite got our water system back to the point where it's safe and potable to drink. We have had an opportunity to go through the town and itemize the damages that we have experienced, put numbers on that. We have met with FEMA. We also heard the 75% is what FEMA would fund of our damages, net eligible damages, that's not replacement costs. And I'd like to walk you through a little bit of the cost estimation that we have done to give you an idea of what the impact is to the city of Rushford. The third page, we have homes and businesses of $55.5 million. This assessment was done by a local bank who conducted surveys of the businesses, got feedback as to what their damages were, what the equipment loss has been. They put together a pretty decent estimate, I feel, as to what the residential impact is. So the total homes and business damage is $55 million. Our loss to our city buildings.
Representative Kelleher has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does that loss include contents, or is that just structural?
My understanding, Madam Chair and Representative, is that that is the loss that includes the building and the equipment that was in it.
We just saw a different number earlier today, so trying to match those two things up.
Briefly clarify that I worked on some of the process of Q-Lens data, and I talked to the group earlier today, and we have reconciled our numbers that you're seeing today that I presented to you this afternoon.
Thank you.
We had some concerns that was differences. The only thing we had removed the village of Rushford Village from some of these numbers that I presented to you.
Thank you.
And just for the record, those were two members of the audience from Fillmore County, I believe, right? We're taping and for matters of identification, just so that they understand who is speaking. Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we would like to underscore the point that much of the building loss, we feel a lot like the Katrina survivors. We have houses that have been damaged beyond repair, even beyond the homeowner's ability to remove them from their land. And we're very concerned that we don't end up in a situation now where there just isn't a sustainable amount of housing stock and businesses left. Not only do we need to replace, but we got to get rid of the ones that are not habitable anymore. If I could turn to the next page, Madam Chair. Our city buildings. We haven't lost a building, but the damage to those buildings is $1.3 million. Just getting it back to the point of where it was before the flood. Our wastewater treatment plant. That plant goes back, I believe there's portions of it that date back to the late 60s. As we've mentioned, there was 4 feet of water. You can imagine that the water that is shown in this isn't the total flood. It's the next day after it had a chance to subside. It's probably gone down to 3 feet. So anything that's 3 feet higher than that water is shown is underwater at the time. floodwaters came over the dike, and they carried a load of silt, which was carried into our wastewater treatment plant to replace all the sewage that was in that plant. The sewage ended up in our community, and one of our big problems has been how to get that silt out of our plant and out of our sewer lines. The damage to our plant to get it to the point of running is $1 million. This plant, we've been told by FEMA that they're investigating the flood level in town, and they may come back and tell us that the plant is below 100-year flood elevation, so we would have to raise that plant up to get out of the situation next time this flood occurs. The cost of building a new plant is $7.2 million. And typically that would be something that the city would do through PFA. I just don't see how the city of Rushford could come up with the money to retire a debt on $7.2 million. The $7.2 million is not a FEMA-eligible expense. FEMA would tell us that they would help us with their share of the $1 million, which is the $750. We'd be told that the state may put in 15% under the regular program. That still leaves the city of Rushford with a $100,000 bill just to get to the point where we have an old plant again. And that old plant would be below the level of the flood elevation. So we would definitely...
Can I ask a question? Did FEMA ever give you an indication on when they will make that determination?
Mr. Stewart.
I would pass that back to the city administrator, Madam Chair.
And you're speaking for the first time. Please identify yourself.
Wendy Blatt, city administrator for Rushford. FEMA has indicated that their interest is to see what the Corps of Engineers and DNR Waters Division are going to come up with as a solution for what happened in Rushford. And to this point, we have no answer to that question. I believe their feeling is that if it comes back that there's a higher flood stage, then all things have to be built to a higher level in the community for public infrastructure. If they come back and say that the dikes can stay at a certain level or are at the right level, then we can reconstruct or build something to that level. So a lot of unknowns. We're waiting patiently for that answer. We thought we might get it today, but apparently it's tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have concluding comment? We're just working our way through that. Yes. Mr. Stewart.
Madam Chair, if I could turn to the fire and ambulance services. As the mayor indicated, we pretty much lost all of our equipment. Our guys got out there and started fighting the flood, and as you can see, they were pretty much stopped in their tracks. The damage to our equipment and our building for the fire department is $1.3 million. Once again, eligible portion of that would still leave the city of Rushford with $130,000 of local share. So we are pleading with you to help us meet that unfunded portion of the flood debt.
Representative Mahoney has a question.
So the committee understands, and I think it was said in our tour of Rushford today, the vehicles, but could you know, how many police cars, how many fire trucks, how many EMS vehicles, how many ambulances, just so we have an idea of what you lost and what you're going to need to replace?
Representative, every public works vehicle was parked next to the wastewater treatment plant. We have two plows, we had four pickup trucks, we had a motor grader, we had a front end loader, we had a skid steer, we had a street sweeper, we had two John Deere tractors, we had, list goes on and on. I have a detailed accounting for that, but
well, all that stuff. I'm actually more interested in your emergency service.
Sorry,
vehicles.
Representative, I'll let the mayor answer that.
If I may help, Mr. Stewart, four squad cars, one of which was ours, one from the neighboring jurisdiction of Preston and Lanesboro, two Fillmore County squad cars, two of our fire trucks, and one of our ambulances.
We can always plow the streets a day late, but it's a little tough to bring somebody back from a serious accident, so I'm more worried about the emergency. You know.
If we can just quickly, we'll just move ahead here. I'm seeing we have
two more presenters, and we just want to be sure they each get 10 minutes, so we can conclude quickly.
If I could waste your time for just a little bit, mm-hmm. Madam Chair, the cost of moving debris away from town is $1.8 million. And once again, we have the same issues with how to pay the local share of that. If I could turn you to the second page from the end, I've once again summarized what these costs are. The wastewater utility cost I have at $9 million, which is the cost of the new plant plus the cost of repairing the collection system and the existing plant.
Representative Leader has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The debris removal, was that volunteer, or did you? How did you come to that cost?
The city administrator is going
to... We hired a couple of trash haulers to help us in that endeavor. Certainly there's been a lot of volunteers involved as well. But the main part was to get it to the public right-of-way to a haul point that the MPCA had approved. And from there we're hauling to the appropriate landfills.
Madam Chair, I'm just concerned so they get repaid. If they had volunteers, they wouldn't get paid. So it's a good thing you hired it.
Madam Chair, returning to the second page to the end, we have a total impact to the public facilities in the city of Rushford of $14.5 million. We have met with FEMA. They have explained to us what their funding system is, and we have an anticipation that we would get 15% of that eligible amount from the state also. That leaves us with a shortfall in total of $1.5 million. If we have to build a new wastewater treatment plant, that adds $7.2 million to that. We have to raise our wells up to get them out of the flood level. That's another $200,000. If I could turn you to the last page. What you can do to help us. Do you want to do that, Wendy?
Sure. Well, essentially, the issue is this. When you have a budget under $1 million, and you have these kind of needs, it's pretty easy to say to anyone, we have a problem. And I've been around, and I know a lot of you that are sitting here, and I know that politics is politics. This is beyond that. This is human need. And there's, as you drove around our community, I think you can say Rushford responded in its part, and we know that somebody needs to help us, and that's why we came here today, to plead our case, because the losses are huge, and without it, quite honestly, there will be no Rushford going forward. Businessmen need to be incentivized and encouraged that there's a future. The residents who have been well taken care of to this point by FEMA need to know there's a future, and when people have a hope that there's a future, we will have a future. So that's in your hands. And we ask you seriously to give us every consideration.
And I will say the city of Rushford did an outstanding job in a very short time in illustrating exactly what you just summarized. That is now a very meaningful reality. So thank you very much. And we'll have now the Olmsted County. Jim Beer, Mike Sheehan, Gary Newman. We're hearing first from the chair of the Olmsted County. Who are we hearing from first?
Jim Beer.
Okay.
Yep. Chair, thank you for having us tonight. I'm passing around a sheet that highlights what we've had in Olmsted County. The numbers may be a little big, but when you have a market value of over $8 billion, as we do in Olmsted County, this doesn't even go to one-half of 1%. These numbers that you see in front of you include all the private property in Olmsted County, and they also include Olmsted County's part. They do not include the City of Rochester, the City of Eota, the City of Dover, the City of St. Charles, or the townships. So other governmental agencies are not included in this recap. It's all private property and Olmsted County property. Again, you can see there's $32 million in private property. That number, we've got backup. That comes from parcels that we've had our appraisers out, and they've gone as many parcels as they can visit, and this is the appraised value. This does not include the content. We do not know what FEMA is going to do for us at this point. That's yet to be determined. So once we have those numbers, we can go from there. Are there questions? I think it's fairly self-explanatory.
Let the county go first.
Okay.
I'm Mike Sheehan, the county engineer with Homestead County, and I do appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon or evening. And as far as infrastructure in the county, we're estimating our infrastructure damage at just over $1.6 million on the county system. That does not include the $350,000. We had an estimate from the townships last Thursday evening, about $350,000. So total, we're around $2 million without any city damage. We've got some major bridges that we have repaired one of them already. And the second bridge that's on the Whitewater, that basically from Rochester East, the amount of water in that area is around 14 inches of rainfall. And one of the bridges is on our five-year CIP. It's actually waiting. I can't be positive enough to encourage you for the local bridge bonding bill. That is something that we badly need. We're going to try to repair this bridge with the intent that there'll be some bridge bonding that we can replace the structure next year. So we got a detail here. I can give you copies of that. I've also got some pictures that I can pass around of some of the structures and some of the damage. But right now our estimate, and once we get into the repairs, I think some of the repairs is going to be more severe than what we've estimated. And I know that we aren't anywhere near as severe as Winona, Houston, or the city of Rushford, but I think once we start doing our annual bridge inspections, we're going to find some other issues with our structures. So again, thank you.
And again, just let me reiterate, if you'd like backup on any of these numbers that Mike or the mayor or myself has indicated, let us know. We can get you the backups so that you can see the detail in these numbers.
Representative Sertich and I were just wishing that we'd have the calculator going all day, and I was looking over to our fiscal analyst, Corinne Viewers, wondering if she had any rough estimate of all those numbers we've been hearing today. It is mind-boggling, and we probably won't have a simple total at the end of the evening. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sheehan, have they inspected, have the FEMA people inspected the bridges, or is that just your assumption that they're repairable? Because a lot of times, if you repair them, you could replace the structure, my experience with FEMA.
Mr. Sheehan.
The one bridge that we have repaired is a bridge that we constructed in 2001 where the velocity took out the approach and a good portion of all the fill. So we have been in and repaired that with a contractor. And the other structure is a bridge that we're hopeful that we can get the bonding dollars. Am I going the right path here?
Yeah, no, the question I asked you, have the FEMA's inspectors looked at the bridge or not?
FEMA inspectors were out to look at the two bridges.
Oh, so they've given an estimate on it, okay.
And we have a meeting tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. with the FEMA people in the county.
Mayor?
Thank you very much, Mayor Adele Brady, Rochester, Madam Chair and members. Thank you so much for being here and to hear about the flood experiences and the devastation that took place in southeastern Minnesota. And I want to just also say thanks to all of the people. Many obviously are not here that worked tirelessly during that time and continue to work, both staff and volunteers that have done all of this. Many of our fellow cities and counties are truly in dire straits, and we sincerely hope that help can be provided soon, particularly for our neighbor communities. In Rochester, we did not escape the storms or flood events unscathed, but we were very fortunate considering past flood events that had devastated Rochester in the past. Between 1983 and 1995, the city and Homestead County constructed a flood control project with assistance from the Corps of Engineers and Natural Resource Conservation Service. And without that project, we would have suffered several $100 million of damage in Rochester. Some areas of Rochester had between 10 and 11 inches of rain in 24 hours, which was almost double what we had back in the flood of 1978. As it was, Rochester suffered an estimated $1,222,000 $1,500 in damage to city infrastructure and an estimated $16,650,000 in private property damage. And while those are significant losses, they pale in comparison to our flood experiences back in 1951, 1965, 68, 78, and they certainly pale in comparison to the losses experienced by our neighbors to the east. I would also add on behalf of the city of Elgin, I was asked to do this, they have $325,000 in city infrastructure and cleanup, and that does not include private property. As almost everybody has said, if not everybody, we would urge the legislature and the governor to hold a special session soon to address at a minimum the flood damage relief for southeastern Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. And now we have the city of Yoda. Wes Bussell, the mayor, and the chair of the Dover Yoda St. Charles Sanitary Sewer District.
Good evening, Madam Chair and city members, and thank you for being here tonight. We hear a lot about the other communities, but we kind of mimic our sister city down in Houston. All our damage came from within. If you were to drive through our city, it probably wouldn't look like much, but it was much damage. But I was in Michigan when the flood came, and my wife called me and said, I know there's not much you can do about this, but we have 3 feet of water in our basement. And she didn't even cry or chew me out. But we're about a city of 1,900 people, 685 houses, and about 26 businesses, 716 total houses and businesses. And 600 of those houses and businesses sustained flood damage. Minute number of about 50 had minor damage in their basements, just in the damp carpets. The other 450 that sustained damage ranged in the amount of 14 inches of water in their basement to just about 6 feet. Five families were displaced. Floor of the Catholic Church heaved. Several other homestead houses floors heaved. We have a market value of about $105 million for our city, and we have an estimated damage of $9,600,000 in infrastructure and private homes and businesses. So we're marking somewhere around the 10% damage to our city. We estimated And I base my numbers on what insurance adjusters are paying for or giving out for damages to houses that, and businesses. So we have $9,335,000 in damages to houses. I just with 3 feet of water, I had $30,000 in my own house of damage. We've to date sent over 600 tons of debris, carpet, and household items to the Kelmer landfill in Olmsted County. Over 600 tons. That does not include appliances, does not include electronics, TVs, and monitors, does not include the hazardous paints and waste, does not include the asbestos tiles that were removed out of several areas. So, like in Houston, all our water came up through the sewer system and through infiltration into houses. They're not all old houses, many new houses, most of them all finished. And we have a budget of about annual budget of about $600,000 in our city. And to date, we've incurred a very reasonable number of over $300,000 in expenses. I'm not sure what we're going to do. We got a pretty good bank there. Maybe they'll loan us some money when they come to collect on some of the bills. So the first page is really a summary of preliminary damages in our city. The second page of the handout is a summary of hazard mitigation costs. an opinion by our city engineer on what needs to be done in our city to stop this. In the third page, I'm representing, I'm also the chairman of the Dover-Yoder-St. Charles Area Sanitary Sewer District. One of the things that Dover and St. Charles are also affected, but Yoder's the highest point, and our sewer flows to Dover, and from Dover goes on to St. Charles to some lift stations where the sewer plant is. And at the height of this, we were sending 4.5 million gallons of water and sewage down to a 1.2 million gallon plant. And the system just couldn't take it. This isn't the first time these backups have occurred. This is the fourth time, but nothing to this extreme. The third page of your handout just shows damage to our sewer plant. Those are actual damages that we've inspected and incurred of a little over $101,000. There may be other costs that we aren't aware of yet. The residual damage is showing up, motors and pumps that were covered. What can you do? We're like most of these other small cities around here and around the state. We have limited financial resources. With a $600,000 budget, we're at about a 51% mill rate in our community already, which is a little bit above the normal already. We don't have a lot of funds, and I'm not sure how we're going to pay for some of this. I haven't heard anything back from FEMA. We have not met with them as a city. They just came to our town this last week, and people started to meet with them. And the only stories I've heard is FEMA said they will get back to them within about 10 business days. Those who have had some conversation or adjustments with FEMA, the underlying factor is that they don't qualify for the grant because they can still live on the main floor of their house. So if everything in your basement's ruined, you don't need your basement to live in your house, so you can still live in your house, and therefore you aren't eligible for FEMA grants. That's what they've been told so far, including some of my relatives in Rushford that were wiped out. It didn't get to your first floor, so you're not covered because you don't need it in your base. You don't need your basement to live. But people, like I did, lost the furnace, lost the water heater, the rest of the stuff I live in, we're going to survive one way or another. But there's a lot of people on fixed incomes, single mothers with families. There's a lot of people who need help. I'll survive. I'll find a way to survive, but there's a lot of people that won't. Now we're coming into winter with the heating bills. We got people who got basements tore apart, some floors heaved. I'm not sure we need to try to help them. We need to help our city. And I think that one thing I want to say is, let Minnesota lead the way and demonstrate true Minnesota to the United States. It's not let Minnesota be one of the victims in the country. Let Minnesota lead with their heart. I know this may be a sore subject to some, but they seem to get millions and millions for stadiums, but now we're dealing with people. We're dealing with their lives, dealing with families, we're dealing with their house. Some of these houses are their retirements, their futures. And I would implore you as leaders of our state to come into your heart and look at how you want to treat your citizens and your people and your businesses, and how you want to demonstrate your heart and your ownership to the United States. And
well put, and such a fitting end to really quite a wonderful...
I like to use the acronym, do all the good you can to all the people you can, to as much as you can, as long as you can. I know it comes down to dollars, but you need to prioritize them to help our people as much as you can. So thank you very much for that expression.
Representative Murphy has a kind of a general question, and maybe people in the audience can listen in if whoever might have the answer.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure that the answer is here tonight, but from the beginning of the megahertz system and the communication system that's supposed to be statewide, I've had some doubts about it, but it's in place now, and it's in three zones now, and I'm still not a believer that it's ever going to get to northeastern Minnesota, but maybe it is. But those of you that talked about it and talked about the need, if at some time you could or would be willing to speak about really not specific problems that came about because of the flood, not because some of you were on VHF and some were on 800 and some of you were in a valley, but if there were specific things that happened at this emergency time and you can define those, I would like to hear about them. If you had a plan for how you were going to switch over to the proper radio system before the flood, but you were unable to because you didn't have the funds, because the funds have, the costs have risen so fast, I would like to know about that plan. And I know, and I'm a believer, that we do need to have a communication system where everybody talks to each other. And the courts have to talk to the police, and the police have to talk to the fires, and the EMS people, and the county people have to talk to the state people, and the state people, and it's got to be probably better than the hams, but wasn't it wonderful that the ham operators were there? I really appreciate your comments about that topic tonight, and if you have any further communication with me, I would like to hear about it, and you can reach me to Jenny Nash.
Representative Mary Murphy, Hermantown. In case anyone has that, because that's been an issue of hers for a long time. Thank you very much. Members, there are other cities represented in the, and let me just say that the mayor and city administrator of Goodview are here, the mayor of St. Charles is here, the mayor of Elba, the mayor of Stockton, the mayor of Minnesota City. We don't have them on our agenda, and we are nearly out of time, but because I have three chairs, I would perhaps just ask the mayor of Goodview, Stockton, and Minnesota City to come forward if there are, because you haven't been on the agenda, you don't need to, but if you would like to just, in closing, give us a few sentences. And please identify yourself for the record.
Good evening, Madam Chair and Committee. I, first of all, Dan Matake, the City Administrator for Goodview. Mayor Weimerskirch was not able to be here tonight.
And I should say that our bus went to Goodview, and Representative Pawlowski told us a bit about what happened there, but
yes.
Glad to have you here.
First of all, Madam Chair and Committee, thank you for coming down here this evening and listening to all these very tragic stories that went on. Goodview was not affected or did not have any bridges collapse, any roads washed away. We were affected by floodwaters that ran into and through the west part of Goodview. It went through Sunny Acres, a resident community of about 50 households, and then deposited its waters into Goodview Lake. This lake does not have a natural outlet to it, and thus the waters rose approximately from Saturday afternoon till Sunday morning. It rose about 12 to 15 feet. That displaced approximately 225 residents in 140 apartments, 12 townhomes, and not to mention about 20 businesses that have lost numerous days of production due to the high waters. Some of those are still not functioning. We had to literally pump water out of Goodview Lake into a private lake. That pumping, which took approximately 36 to 48 hours, cost the city approximately, again, $35,000 to $40,000. The high waters of our lake also put undue stress on one of our lift stations. That lift station is currently still running, but it has lost a number of years off of its useful life. We have no estimate right at this point in time of what that lift station, the damage of it, and the cost to repair that. We need to explore every option of mitigation to not have this happen again to our residents and to the community of Goodview. We have some very, very rough estimates of between $400,000 and $700,000 to create an outlet to Goodview Lake. That involves dealing with the DNR. That involves potentially dealing with the city of Winona, the state, the county, all those different departments. Is any of this reimbursable by FEMA or covered by FEMA? We don't know at this point in time. We have not had our city meeting with the FEMA representatives. On top of that, we are already facing as a city a potential $4.5 million water treatment project that we are being basically forced to undertake to comply with federal standards for radium removal in our drinking water supply. This unfunded mandate puts a huge burden on our city of approximately 3,300 people. Our total city budget for a year is just over $2 million. And so I believe it is pretty obvious that without any help from this committee, without any help from this legislature, that we as a city will have to make a very tough choice to choose not to protect our citizens from this flood ever happening again. And once again, I want to thank you. I do have to point out that LGA has been a huge topic with the city of Goodview. I've been on the job for 11 months, and I can tell you that in looking through records, Goodview has lost over 50% of its LGA from 2002 to 2008. We were over $250,000 back then. This, for 2008, we are just receiving just over $130,000. And the issue is regional centers. We are right next to Winona. I'm not downplaying Winona at all, but it has hurt Goodview tremendously. For that reason, we've had to raise our property taxes to levels that shouldn't have to be. I'll be glad to entertain any questions. Thank you again.
Thank you very much. And we're going to conclude, Madam Speaker, if we don't often have an opportunity to conclude because we don't often have the Speaker at our committee meetings, but because some of what we've heard obviously goes beyond the purview of our committee, I thought it appropriate to ask you to give some closing comments.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I want to thank Chair Hausman and the Capital Investment Committee. I also want to point out that Representative Liebling and Representative Norton had joined us earlier today on the tours. And I think it was very instructive for all of us to see so much of what has happened here. You also should all know that the delegation from southeastern Minnesota has done a great job, both House and Senate, of keeping us informed and up to date, sometime multiple times a day. I was down on Tuesday, the 21st, right after the flood, and since that time, there has been a steady stream of communication from the southeastern delegation, and I think that's very important for you to all know that they have been representing you well to the leadership and beyond. So I want to commend them for that. I want to thank all of you for coming here tonight and spending time out of what could be spent cleaning up or helping neighbors or doing something else to present to us. I think it's very important. I want to be clear that we have been crystal clear about having a special session. And yesterday, Senator Pogemiller and I sent a letter to the governor, and not because we are not committed to a transportation package here. I want to be very clear. We, and I think I could say 100% around this table, bipartisanly, are committed to a comprehensive transportation bill, but it is difficult to get there during this very short special session. So we offered to let that go right at the moment. For the governor to call the special session to focus on these things, disaster relief for southeastern Minnesota, the aftermath of the bridge collapse, local government aid, and some property tax relief. It's very clear from hearing from you today that that's really very, very important to all of you, and it's important to all of us. I believe that there are no more excuses for not calling a special session at this point.
and we are Minnesotans first. In fact, today I said in Rushford to folks there, I feel like we're southeastern Minnesotans first. And we need to come together just like we've done in the past over disasters around this state. We have a higher calling, and we need to do that. I believe that we have taken the items off the table that the governor has told us are controversial in the tax bill, in terms of transportation, whatever it is. We feel like we have done our part at this point to get us to the point where there should be no more excuses but to call a special session. We want to do this for you. We feel very strongly about it. We feel it's the right thing to do. And I'm hoping that I had a conversation with the governor today outside of the school at Rushford. It was long enough that we concluded that we needed to get some folks together, and we're going to have our high-level staff meeting again either tomorrow or Friday to begin in earnest discussions. We have done this before, folks, and I want to make sure that this time it happens for you, because you've been through a lot here, and you can't be, I don't think you've been victimized by this event, by this natural disaster. You don't need to be victimized again here. So I hope that we can get this done, and I really appreciate so many colleagues coming here to see this, and I hope that very soon we can have good news on a special session, and we can put together a package that can address the public infrastructure needs, the issues of business getting started again, and maybe even attracting new business, as well as the agricultural issues that are out there. And we needed 7 more miracles that weekend for the folks who lost their lives. We don't have that, but what we can do now is that we can turn this into a better situation by having this special session. So that is a personal commitment from me, and I appreciate you being here tonight. Thank you.
And we've gone over time a little bit, but we're so glad that local legislators were able to join us and hear this. And we will be back. Representative Junkie indicated earlier his committee, the Ag Committee, will be here specifically looking at that piece. And our committee will be back, and there will be an evening hearing Thursday, October 11, in Lanesboro, where we again focus on infrastructure and how we build a local economy through that. Again, that is the Lanesboro Community Center from 7 to 9 p.m. on Thursday, October 11, and we look forward to that. And again, thank you. Pardon me? Oh, where's the bus? Where do we...
They went back.
Around the corner. So we'll find it. Thank you for coming. Meeting adjourned.